Picking it up for Saturday morning, the 5th of October, 74, channel 1 over, and I'm setting it up for Saturday morning, the 5th of October, 74, channel 1 over, and I'm setting it up for Saturday morning, the 5th of October, 74, channel 1 over, and I'm setting it up for Saturday morning, the 5th of October, 74.
Yeah. Getting back to...
You know, just as soon as the sun come out, it felt good. Did you notice how it changed?
Yes. It changes fast when that sun comes up. And then through that glass, it's really...
Yeah. Did that glass make it warmer?
Oh, yes. That sun shining through that glass, that's what makes it so nice and comfortable in a car sitting out.
Yeah. And of course, it knocks the wind off.
No wind can't get through you in here.
Yeah.
Fella could just sleep warm and cozy right there if that there was front glass there.
Yeah.
Windshield was turned towards the sun shining in now on you. Wouldn't need no fire in here.
You wouldn't need any fire.
No. But
yes, I remember I actually said something about the Oats.
Yes, she's asked me a time or two if I got to tell you about the. It was a kind of a peculiar situation in a way. A lot of people would call it, I don't know what, but that's what I call it. I was working over at Spencer. My daddy-in-law lived down here. He was an awful good man, a good worker in his day.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd sold a field of oats. Well, he wasn't very much with machinery. And he depended on me and the boys helping him to harvest his oat crop. Well, he meant to be fair and paid us well for it. He gave us half of them to cut them and rake them and stack them. Cut them with the mowing machine. Raked them with a horse rake and stacked them like hay. Well, I was working over at Spencer at the...
You didn't put them in shocks, you just stacked them.
That's right. We raked them in windrows. And picked them up and stacked them like hay. And I was working over at Spencer Casto Rubber Company. Well, I was doing what part of the farming that the boys couldn't do and him on the weekends.
Yeah.
So on my long break when I come in on Saturday, I was working shift work. Sometimes I'd have Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. But this particular weekend, well, I'd cut the oats one weekend, and they laid down all week, rained on them. Well, they got dry a Saturday evening, like this hay here. Yesterday, and it got dry enough so I could rake them in the windrow, but didn't get them stacked. Well, I had to go back to work the next day. Couldn't be here on Monday. That is, this was Sunday that I had decided to stack the oats, you know. Well, because they'd been down a week and I had to be away on Monday. And when I mentioned it to my daddy-in-law, he said, he didn't talk plain. Him didn't like to work on Sunday. So I insisted, me and him and the boys went back and we stacked one stack of approximately half of them, as near as we could divide them in the field, you know. Well, the old fellow was so bitter and it was hurting him so bad to be up there working on Sunday.
Is that right?
He said now, he said...
Is that cool enough?
It's a little too cool. So he said, when I got the one sack up, now he said, that's about half of them. He said, you can have this stack. And me and the boys, I'll let mine lay down tomorrow, and me and the boys will come back here and stack it.
Yeah.
That will be mine up there. If it rains on it and spoils it, why, them my oats. This is your stack. Well, it was just so... he was so earnest and so sincere in his belief that I couldn't say, well, we'll go ahead and stack them anyhow. He said, like I said, I don't say this to make light of the old fellow, but he couldn't talk plain. He said him didn't like work on Sunday. And he'd take a chance on his oats laying over till the Monday. Well, went on. Well, him and the boys stacked the oats, put up a nice stack of them and in fine shape.
On Monday?
On Monday. Well, we let our oat stack stand there till the next spring, corn planting time. Well, he had kind of failed in his work, and he rented his corn ground by the oat field. Yeah, rather in below the oat field and up for the end of the oat field. He rented it to a neighbor around here next spring to put in corn. Well, in the winter months, there's a big hickory tree had fell. This neighbor in the cornfield, dead. And this neighbor, I was back there working in my field here, putting out a crop. We were putting a corn crop out in the spring. He was working out on the old man end, and I was working on in my field. Well, he builds him a fire in this old hickory tree, piles the limbs and stuff on it. And if you get a hickory log fire, if it's dry, it'll burn up. Regardless of how much rain comes on it, it'll keep burning until it burns up just about.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, he built this fire in the morning just before noon, and we come off of the hill at noon. He went his way, and I come off to my dinner. And that fire hadn't started out over the ground, hadn't left the log when we started in. But when we went back, why, that fire had broke out, burned up over the oat stubble where the old man had sowed in grass. He'd sowed the oat stubble in meadow grass. But through the winter, there was the dead weeds, crabgrass, and the dead grass was enough to burn over this oat stubble. Well, that fire got out from that hickory log and burnt up and burnt my oat stack up and went out. I was saving it for to feed my horses while I was putting in my crop the next spring. You know, they had grain in them, oats did. Well, I'd got one feed. I had my sled back there, and I loaded a little jag on the sled one evening and brought in, and I'd fed my horses one feed out of my oat stack. And the curiosity of it was, the fire burned up and burned up my oat stack. Went out. When we went back on the hill, now, my dad-in-law's oat stack was standing up above on the, over the next feet, not hurt. So that there was a warning that it don't pay to me to work on Sunday.
Yeah.
The old man, see, he was a contender. Wasn't necessary to work on Sunday.
Yeah.
Well, I worked on Sunday and it profited me nothing. Now that was the old story
that
Icy wanted me to tell.
That was about a pretty clear case, wasn't it? The fire got out and it got your old stack, but it didn't bother his.
That's right. It was a warning to me. So since that, now I've worked on Sunday. Now if this hay here tomorrow, if I was here, and this hay would get in real good shape.
Yeah.
See, it's been down a week and over.
Yeah.
This hay would get in real good shape here. I wouldn't feel bad on hooking up to the baler and baling it, taking it up tomorrow by it being down so long.
Yeah.
But the weather, man, of course they don't always hit it, but the weatherman over Oak Hill predicted a dry weekend.
Yeah.
Well, if it stays dry till Monday, it'll be in better shape Monday than we'll be this evening or tomorrow, you see.
Yeah.
So it's worth taking a chance, I think.
Yeah.
And I think if a fella deliberately, now this old man, he contended and helped me stack my old stack against his will. But and it didn't profit me anything. Only the satisfaction of having my old stack up a couple of days before, one day before his. So he fed his old stack and the fire consumed mine.
Yeah.
So that was a lesson to me.
And there wasn't anything he could do about it. The fire had consumed yours and left his, so he could have to go ahead and feed his.
Well, it wasn't his fault. He went according to his conscience, and I went against him.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Now, at that time, you didn't have any conscience on that.
I wasn't living a Christian life at all. But he lived it the best he knowed how, and practiced it.
Yeah.
And it works out.
When you were growing up, you weren't too particular about those things.
Well, no. That's the trouble with the country today. People is not conscious of the fact that there's a supreme being over us.
Yeah.
See what I mean? We try to take things in our own hands, like I did about the oats, you see, and it didn't work out.
Now, you think you learned something from that?
Certainly I learned something, yes. That's a lesson. If I live to be as old as Methuselah, I'll never forget.
Yeah. And that affected you right then. You took it hard.
Sure.
Because you needed the oats, one thing.
Yes, I needed the oats. That's why I contended to put them up, you see. Plan for to leave them stand there and feed them the next spring when in the spring of the year usually stalk is weak from the winter if they're not wintered on good nourishing feed.
Yeah.
Well, we had to work our horses. We had to till the ground, get the ground in shape to put out a crop for to live on the next winter.
Yeah, and you had to have something for
For the horses. So that was a lesson that a man never forget. Pain. It was pain for the far. There was as much dead filth and trash and leaves and crabgrass and stuff on above as it was up 2 miles back.
Well, now this other thing we were talking about the molasses. Now you, let me see, that Monday, when was it? When we took up this little hay down here.
Yeah.
You really had it in mind to go over there and help them out a little bit.
Yes.
Larry's.
Yes.
Where they're making the molasses.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And?
I was fouled up here and couldn't. See.
Yes, but you got into it, and the stuff down there had been down a long time.
Yes.
And it was ready to come up.
Yes, yes, yes. And when I explained it to Larry, he said, well, that's all right. He said that I think I can get a man over here to help out in your place.
Oh, he was really counting on you.
Oh, yes. Yes. Him and Doris, they really depend on us.
Yeah.
You see, not necessarily, but we have treated them so they can, when we tell them anything, they hit that away unless something comes up to that impossible.
Now, Larry and Lowell and Lawrence, all three of them, had a little batch of sorghum.
Cane.
And you figured that you get a little over there for yourself.
Well, yes, I will. If either one of the boys, I believe, had a gallon, I believe that I'd get part of them.
Yes. Well, what I was thinking about, what Leo said just a while ago, he came in from that trip last night and said that cane hadn't panned on too well.
Well, it has. No. Well, a man can't figure on too much.
Larry got
7 gallon. Lawrence 11. Lowell 32.
Yeah. But Lowell's still not in such good shape because he got to split that with
his mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law. He put it on her ground.
Yeah.
So?
Dale, Lowell's got costly molasses and unless his mother-in-law, I don't know whether she does or not, if his mother-in-law splits the cost, expenses,
yeah,
making it, but if she doesn't, Lowell's in worse shape than Lawrence or Larry.
Yeah. He got a little more...
He's got more money in his. See, them molasses cost him $3 a gallon, plus all the work to get them. And that's just what money I expect they was out now. There's a lot of little instances that a fella could count in, add a little extra time or charge it, you know, to the molasses. That maybe make them run higher per gallon.
Well, now, who's got the mill over there? Use somebody else's mill.
Yes, this old man, he's 83 years old, and he's got the mill set stationary on his place. He raises a cane patch himself every year.
Yeah.
And finally, he's got it well figured and well under control. Is the best way I'd know to explain it. Here, I'll just make an illustration. Say he'd have his mill set back here, near where the hog pen is, back of this bottom. And the road comes in over there and comes through this bottom. His cane's in this bottom here. Well, his has to be made up first before other people can get into his mill to make those.
Yeah.
See what I mean? He's used his head for something else besides a hat rack. Puts his cane patch in front of his mill. And he don't get busy with the neighbors' cane and let his spoil. His made up first. Then the neighbors comes in through. See what I mean?
Sure.
Pretty well, pretty thoughtful, ain't he? If he is 83 years old.
Yeah. And then they take turn about. They all have a
what?
Day or something.
Well, they he starts on, say, Lawrence's patch, goes to Larry's or Lowell's patch, makes each crop separately.
Yeah.
Right, funny in a way, if you've never seen it done, now they have to keep that juice even separated. How would he do that in a 18 bar pan?
Yeah.
He starts the rag through.
Oh.
Rag follows through, and when he runs off when it cooks down, the green juice comes in. Well, it boils, the green juice does, and the green skimmings comes up on it. Well, they take them all. He runs it on up into the next bars where the syrup, where it goes into syrup, and they still skim it. Goes on up into the where it goes into molasses, the last five or six bars, I believe. And that's curious now. The molasses, the far is under the raw juice. Comes up here, in the middle is the syrup. And on up where the steam goes out up the smokestack, at the end where the smokestack's on, boils down into molasses.
Yeah.
And they come off up there.
Don't need as much heat up there.
Well, I never been able to figure that out.
Well, he can put in one jag right after the other. He don't even have to stop him.
No. When he gets all the juice in the pan from one crop of cane, he starts grinding. The next crop follows the juice right on in, and when all the juice gets out of the tub where he strains the juice through into the pan, while he starts his, he separates it, clean rag through, and follows it right on through the green juice, follows it right on up into the syrup, he follows it right on up into the molasses end.
Yeah.
And his rag comes right on around, and when he gets his, it's right up to the hole where the molasses goes out into the container. And then he's got his other juice there, ready to go into molasses, you see.
Well, now, it takes one man to do the grinding out there, don't it?
Yes, sir.
And can one man run the pan?
If he knows his business, he can.
But he really could use a little help, couldn't he?
The most of them do. Most of them do. I seen one man one time. Mom's uncle, Uncle Bill Griffey. He was the completest hand to make molasses that I ever saw. All he wanted, all Uncle Bill wanted was a man to, with his juice, kept in the tub. He's called me many a time when I'd go to turn the spigot and let juice in his pan.
Yeah.
Don't do that. I take care of that.
Yeah.
He won't let you put a stick of wood in his furnace. Don't do that. I'll take care of that. I know when I need it.
Yeah.
He won't let you throw a skimmer full of skimmings off. If you go to do that, I'll do that.
Yeah.
Now he made molasses too.
Yeah.
Couldn't be beat.
Yeah.
He was worth, well, now, most of people, molasses makers, I've had him here. Mr. Wayne, he was bought him off. But he worked a man to death for skimming. and you had the Far East furnace. You had to keep the juice in the pan for it. He strictly tended to his
molasses.
The molassy end. And one time, this pan I've got up here, he burnt it up here, and we had the awfulest. And where it was burnt, you couldn't get that there scorch out. It come up in black, little black chunk. We couldn't strain them that out of our molasses. We had the awfulest mess of molasses you ever saw. Now that's not a good fellow to do that. Of course, anybody, it could happen to them, and they could burn a pan. But he didn't ratify this. When he found out it was burnt, he should have cleaned his pan.
Oh. Yeah. Just let everything go and clean it out.
Well, he'd had to wasted some juice, maybe. But he'd had better success when they'd have got through the process, you see. Had better material, better molasses. If you're going to cook with potatoes, about the only way you can get rid of the scorch is to discard them and cook another bunch.
Yeah. Well, Leo said something this morning I didn't realize. I just thought you went out to the field, you know, and get your molasses, cut your cane before the frost hit it. And
give me that pan.
And just cut it, and but he had that scar on his hand that he got up there. I think he said topping it.
Yes. Yes. Yes, you have to take the tops off. You have to take the tops off of your cane. You have to take the blades off.
How far along do you do that?
Well, that's your first process of working it into molasses. You go in the field and you blade it first. And then you cut it, and usually you take a corn cutter. Is there far here?
Uh-huh.
It's hot in here. Usually you take a corn cutter and you go along, take a hold of a... You grow 4 or 5 stalks of cane in a hill.
Yeah.
14 or 16 or 18 or 2 foot apart in the row. And have your bulk wide enough for to plow through it and cultivate your cane. So you take a hold of a hill with your hand this way and you cut it off down close to the ground. Don't let the butts of the cane drop on the ground.
Yeah.
For that gets dirt, grit. You've got grit to get out of your molasses, you see, out of your juice. But that can be took out by straining it properly. So you just turn your, when it's cut loose, you just turn it down, take your corn cutter this way and knock the heads off that way.
Oh,
right, while you're in your hand, and then you lay your cane down. And it's cut and topped, ready to pick up and go to the mill.
Oh, I see. You do that when you go up there to cut your cane.
Yeah.
To
grab. Yeah, but this happened. This scar that he told you about. He was maybe going along, bending cane over and topping it with his knife. You know.
Oh yeah.
Didn't have a cutter. You see, a boy wants to do things different sometimes.
Yes.
That's where they get in trouble.
Yeah.
But at any rate, he was working at it.
Well, now let me see if I get that straight. Now, you're going to make a cane, so you just go in there and cut it off, and you've got 10 or 15 stalks in the same clump. And you just cut them off.
Usually five or six.
Five or six. And then you just careful not to get the cut ends in the
dirt. Not to let it drop on the ground, you see. And then you turn it down.
And hit it. Yeah. But now you strip it before you cut it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You go through there and strip it.
Yeah, first.
First. And then you go back and cut it.
Yeah.
And then before you lay it down, you hit it.
Yes, sir. That's the convenient way. That's the way way back people used to do. But anymore, the seasons has got so unpredictable, like our two big frosts.
Yeah.
Night before last and the night before that. They slipped up on us, you see. If they was afraid that frost was going to slip up. Now, them frosts would have ruined a patch of cane. Either one, night before last or the night before that, would have ruined it. It wouldn't have made good molasses.
Yeah.
But if it had been cut, laid down in the patch, even with the heads and blades on, why, it wouldn't have hurt it.
Yeah.
But if it's a standing, I don't know what it does, but now the ground and standing erect there in the patch, not cut loose from the ground, it bites it. Well, it don't hurt it if it's cut and laid down in the patch with the blades on.
Yeah. Well, will that be stacked all together or just stacked right where it grows?
Usually, no, you can't stack it all together. It'll heat.
Oh, I see. So it'll just be in the road?
Just in an arm load.
Yeah. Right there,
and you can just pick it up, and you can go along and blade it there, or you can pick it up and haul it to the processing place and blade it and top it there. Either way you will choose.
Mm-hmm. But it's easier to blade it while it's standing up.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it is.
And it's also easier to top after you're cutting it.
When you're cutting it, you've done got it in your hand.
Yeah.
A lot of times now the cane stalks don't all grow the same height. You maybe don't get one down quite as far as it ought to be, or get one down a little bit too far, but that's the best, quickest, and easiest way to get shed of your top and your cane is to just, when you cut it loose, just turn it down and take your cutter and clip the blades off. The blades, they are the tops. The tops, to put them through, wouldn't really hurt, I don't reckon, the molasses. Mm-hmm. But it's never done.
Yeah.
Never done. I don't know. I wouldn't say it wouldn't. But the tops, cane tops makes good feed. Make good chicken feed. Make good feed for stalk.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking. You see, you can have your mill, and your neighbors can have a batch of that cane, and they come over there and cook it off, and you can have a little get together.
Yes. Well, now that was the secret. And that was why it wasn't such a wasn't such a job, and didn't cost so much, you see.
Yeah.
Back yonder, people help. Like you, I didn't never get to your question answered yesterday about the neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Good neighbors. Never did get that answered successfully, and I studied about it later. Maybe I said something. I didn't mean to say I didn't have good neighbors. We don't have a neighbor. While some of them maybe don't think too much of my way, but I, not a person around here that wouldn't come and help if it needs. Well, that in a way, that's a neighbor, you see.
Yes, it is.
Wouldn't be afraid to holler on any for anybody. You see.
Yeah.
And people used to work together, and they would help in molasses making.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't expect nothing, only maybe a mess of molasses, you see.
Yeah.
So now I expect Larry to take my place out there to help this old gentleman around the pan.
Mm-hmm.
I have an idea he had to pay $2 an hour.
Oh, yeah. Everything's wages
and hours. Yes. Well, now that's why that there ain't nobody, so many people don't fool with Cain. They've got other things more, they think more important.
Yes.
But now, as I see it, we're coming back to that. There'd be people raise cane patch next year if this sugar situation goes on that never raised it before.
Yes, they have to. Well, now, if it's, you see, if you had a few cane patches and you get to visit like that, then all this Friday night activity, Leo went around to see these people, has all gone to the basketball games.
Football.
Football season, that's right.
Yeah.
And now you see.
He can see him around the molasses pen.
Yeah. Something like that.
So,
yeah.
So times has changed.
Well,
people has changed.
You know, if they still did the molasses, they wouldn't have time for all that other.
Well, that's true. That's why the people is having to pay such high prices for their sweets. They've got away from old time.
Yeah. Well, now, like you're saying, but when you get into these sports, you see, they get organized, you see, and some fellas paid to direct it and all like that, and there you've got his reputation to watch out for. He got to win games in order to hold his job. So you're not really out there making cane. You're just out there trying to win.
Yeah. That's right.
And once you do that, the whole thing changes, don't it, girl? Now you take those girls out of softball team. Well, you'd say, well, how in the world could anything go wrong with a bunch of girls playing softball? But then you run into the little coach over there. He's got to win, I guess.
Yes, that's right. And he didn't do it fair. That was the sticking point of it. If the sports was carried on for to as sports should be, it would teach the children to work together, play together, and still be friends. But I brought a bunch of girls back to Ovapa, disheartened, discouraged, and mad because they were treated unfair.
Yeah. And the coach, he was...
Coach and the principal. The principal was with him.
They were together on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they was... we could have maybe had a free-for-all. They was one party there, a man, he kept egging me on. Tell him, go on after him.
No.
Well, it was sports for the children.
Yeah.
That was the intention of it.
Yeah.
But us grown-ups could have ended it up in a free-for-all.
Yeah, sports of another sort.
It wouldn't have been sports. It had just been a free-for-all. Tear down and knockout.
Yeah.
So you've got to use your head for something else besides your hat rack for to keep down trouble a lot of the time.
Yeah.
The Bible says blessed is the peacemaker.
Well, now, so much of the time, say when you all went to the games and when you maybe hauled a team, you run into something like that.
Change time, but this was the worst. This was the worst. Usually, the officials of the games goes and they try to carry the sports on. Whichever team loses the game, why the loser tries to go along and keep his team in good spirits. And a lot of them looks at it that both teams can't win.
Mm-hmm.
And it hits to keep, hits to train the young people the way of life, as I see it. Anything pertaining sports or schools or anything like that, you're working with young people. And that's the intention of the activity and the educational part of it is to train them the way of life, proper way. Am I right or not?
Now that's the intention.
And if it ain't done that way, why, it's wrong.
Of course, they get life either way you take it.
Yes.
If it's rough, they get it.
Yes, but it's supposed that there's just one right way. Right's right, and right don't wrong nobody.
Yeah.
And if you teach a child in the way it should live, when it's young, it won't part from it when he grows old.
Well, it's nice to think about, of course. But now you see, you didn't make syrup all the time. But now, you see, the way the sports goes, you've got that the year-round.
Yes.
So you got your football, and that'll run into another season.
Basketball, and then in the spring it runs into baseball season.
Yeah.
And then into softball season, too, you see.
Yeah.
Any?
Man's got a lot on his mind.
Yes.
Yes, he has.
Well, here's the intention of either sports, I reckon. It's always supposed to be an adult supervisor with any sport. Adults is supposed to supervise the younger people in those sports. Well, if they supervise them as they should be, it's all right. But if the supervisor is crooked, why, you've got a crooked bunch of sports.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling this hay might just get ready this afternoon.
Yes, I think it will.
I'm just betting on it. That's
I believe
all.
It will.
Well,
I said I would come down and talk a little bit, so I'd better go back up and see.
See what's going on.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, right around 600 this Saturday morning, the 5th of October, 74, right after breakfast, and the sun's coming out and warming us up. It was a frosty morning, no frost, but frosty, chilly. Under the sun came over the mountain and hit us. This Saturday morning, the 5th of October, 74. Channel 1 right around 600. Channel 1 right around 600. This Saturday morning, the 4th of October, 74.
Call in now.
He don't know what you know?
I don't.
Did you find that thing?
Yes, sir.
I never saw anything like it.
I never either. And It's curious how it got in now.
Go ahead.
And nobody knows how it, long it's been in there.
What is it? Just a little...
Just a little piece of papa limb.
Limb. About 3 or 4 inches long.
Yes, sir. And it's been in there so long that the twine had wore a groove in it.
Yeah.
And it didn't dawn on me that that could have been a cause of no trouble, the twine awakened, till after I went ahead of bailing. I took it out and went ahead of bailing. Didn't have no more trouble. And when I got through, I mentioned about it, and Leo knew who it was and went and got it.
Yeah.
So.
Now, that's a good long, it's bedded down there, that twine's bedded down there pretty deep.
Yes. Till it didn't travel free. It hasn't got bedded down till it could travel free.
No.
You see. But you don't know how long it's been in there. Look at that, where it's been a catching, the end of it has been a catching the twine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Maybe pulling the gravel out of the...
Yeah.
So it was luck that a fellow found it. Now that's how trouble can come up with machinery.
Yeah.
And you can be ever such a good mechanic and you'd never thought of something like that.
Never think about it.
Never thought of something like that.
Well, now you could look over your tractor and all like that in your baler and you still might have overlooked that.
It was in this groove here where the baler twine traveled through.
Yeah.
It had run up in there.
Yeah.
And broke off. And practically hid.
Yeah. Now wait a minute. On the other side, it shows you how long it's been there.
This side, yes.
Yeah.
And here.
Yeah.
And here, you see.
Yeah.
Rusted.
It's got rust on there. And the rust is caked.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's, that's, well, might never happen again in a lifetime, and then it might happen.
Yeah.
Before the next season's over.
Yeah, well, something like it, something
yes.
like it.
Yes, or maybe something worse.
Yes, well.
That a fella couldn't think about. Looking for, you see.
Yeah. Leo, I want to, now this is the thing right here.
What's that?
Here's the thing. This morning we went to the store, and nothing happened until I got home, and just one little remark brought it out, and it come out of the most insignificant event. We talked on the way down there. I brought up, I told Burl that the car, that truck of his was just as good as new, and I love to sit in it, and he told me about trading for it, and we got into this business of, I guess it's on the way back. We were talking about that, them house sailors.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
And then, but none of that amounted to anything. We met this, we were coming along here almost home, and I noticed he was slowing up, and his other truck was slowing up, and they stopped right there in the road. And there was this little fella, young fella, sort of pale face, pink face or something. And he had his family there, his wife and 2 children. Now, if you go over it the way it happened, you see, he was interested. I guess you asked him how he got along. I don't know.
I asked him how he was getting along with his hogs.
If
he had all of his hogs.
Yeah. Now you tell Leo what you found out about them hogs.
Well, he said he'd sold them all but one sow and two pigs. He just had three head left. I said, did you take them to market or sell them at home? Said he took four to market. Well, I said, was the market good or could you do better at home? Oh, no, he said, I couldn't do better at the market. He said, the market was down. He said, I sold two sows and two litter of pigs to this man lives down the way here about 2 miles, drives a brown station wagon. Well, I knew readily who it was. It was Herschel Jett. For I passed down past the other day, me and Mom, and he had him turned loose, running large there in his garden. No fence, no nothing. And I made the remark that I couldn't do that, and Wood said no. He said I couldn't neither. But now he did. He had him turned loose, and running large there, and they was in his garden.
That was
Jeff. Jeff, yes.
But see, they were talking about them hogs, and I was interested in them hogs. And I, of course, I didn't know. I thought he just had some pigs, and then I heard him say they had a litter, you know. And then it turned out he's selling sows.
Yes, yes. Four head of big sows he took to market, and didn't do so good on him. He didn't tell me. I reckon he's ashamed to tell me how low the price was.
Yeah. That's a lot of livestock, unless a man's got something. How do you feed them,
son? He bought feed over the market as long as he could.
Yeah.
But now you see, he just kept them too long. He bought this feed. He had seven head of big sows down there at one time. You take seven head of big sows, big as this one that I had here.
They'll eat.
And I never made money enough in a week to buy feed for them at the price feed is now.
Yeah.
$10 a bag, $10 a hundred.
Well, he had the hogs and he had the cow and the calf.
Well, now, you see, we're talking about them hogs of those sows. And it looked like we'd just be going fine. I was thinking, well, we'll crank up. And then he put in this other animal, you see.
I asked him if he had the pasture down there, you see. Oh, got the pasture off of Andy. I seen he had, I told him, I said, I seen your calf down in Andy's meadow. I said, did you get the pasture? No, he said, I haven't got it yet, but I had been thinking about it. And I said, well, he said, the cow got out last night and I found her on top of the ridge back end of her on one side of the fence and your cattle on the other, back on top of the ridge there. And he said he had to chase her in.
And
I told him that I had done spoke to Andy and tried to get the pasture. So, I don't know who'll get it.
Andy was supposed to let you know, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Yes, he told
but
me, he said, I'll let
you. He also, Burrell expressed a little concern about that cow, and the boy said, no, she was cold. What was the word he used? What he meant was she wasn't in heat.
I said to him, I said, was she in heat? Tearing around, right before his wife, of course that there's common, you see, and he said, no, he said she wasn't tearing around, Well, now, I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
Why she'd went to left that meadow grass and went to the top of the hill, I don't know.
Well, now, and just as soon as we started up, almost, he made one little remark. I didn't know exactly what it was meant. He said, well, I've learned two things.
What was that?
Go ahead and tell it.
You tell it.
Well... You can tell it better than I can. I just can't get it together, maybe, like I said it.
No, you go ahead and tell it, because it's your story. He found out that old cow was bothering him up there.
Oh, yes, well.
He found out about that old cow, and he found out about the pasture. And then that's all they said. And then we got into, what was it we got into then? Something come up.
That's
before that. There's a whole lot of commotion down there, right down below us, you see, and this boy was driving up, and when we left, Burl started telling me about it. He lived down there in that hollow.
Yes, the boy, Roger's boy, drove up, and guy wanted to know where he come from. Somebody lived down in there. And I said, told him that he did, and that was his farm there. And he said said something about being a good farm. I said, well, is as good as what you've got? I said, no, not. And it isn't. A lot of people might think it would be, but the house is old, not good. Only thing he's got that I ain't got is free gas, right? And you don't know how long that's going to hold up.
Yeah. Well, now, that went on. Nothing else was said until there at the dinner table. And I kind of forget how it came up. Do you remember, bro, how we got into that cow business again?
Oh, yes. I told Leo that she looked just like the old cow that Thelma would come in the cornfield after dark and leave before daylight. Thelma Potter.
Yeah.
And now that did happen. I had...
I'll verify that.
I'd shucked my corn, and then we didn't have these bottoms full of hay like I've told you before. When we come here, there wasn't nothing but wasteland.
Yeah.
These bottoms was. Well, the place in general was just practically wasteland. So we hadn't got no meadow started, and a fellow had to have feed, and you have to take care of fodder good and keep it from bleaching out if it's any good feed in the spring. Well, when people then, when they would chuck the corn, they would tie up a special, several big shocks of fodder. As they'd chuck the corn, they'd cut it into shocks. Well, they'd pull them shocks down and chuck the corn, haul the corn in, crib it, and they would rick the fodder, set the fodder up, and they'd tie about three hickory withes around it to keep it from blowing down and to keep it from...
Two at the top to keep it together.
Yes.
And then one at the bottom, you said.
Yes, sir. One at the top, round the top, and one down about middle ways, one down near the bottom. Keep the wind from getting under it and twisting it and blowing it.
But the thing of it was, you see, that old cow...
She... When I found it out, she'd told my father down that I had put up special for spring feed.
Yeah.
So she was a pretty well trained animal.
Pretty well trained, yeah.
She would be at home at night. he'd get a, go to some neighbor's cornfield, fill a hull, and be back where she ought to be in the morning at milking time.
Daylight.
So, yeah.
Yes, sir. And we was pressing him just a little bit to see if he thought somebody was, if she was getting trained, you see, and all he'd do was just look down at his plate.
Well, you can train stalk, yes.
Yeah.
But now, whether she was trained or not, I don't know. Could have been.
Yeah.
And I never, that's the only brute like that I ever know of doing it. This cow down here that Woods got is a mate for her. I hope she ain't as honest.
Yeah.
I hope she ain't as big a thief. If she is, why, we'll have some trouble.
But you think she's promising?
Well, she could be, yes.
Yeah.
I better check on Mama.
Let me tell you, Leo, that's it. Now, you don't think so, but that is one of the richest things that happened out. See how it comes out just a little at a time?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. That's it. You got milk.
Yes.
I better go see about Mama, too. I'm going to try to keep her from getting putting too many groceries on her table.
Yeah.
Well, tell her, you just tell her to do like I said.
Okay.
And we'll eat some of that there, longhorn cheese.
Well, now you see, that's a nice thing. But now right out there, when you did something to your bailer there, you pulled your hand back right fast and showed me, you said, now that's where... I told you about that.
Well, yeah, that scar there, you see.
Yes.
I did that cranking an old car who had drowned out in a water hole.
Yes.
And the license plate, there was a rod across to stay the headlights.
Yes.
They weren't made like they are today.
Yeah.
And the license plate hung on the rod in front of the radiator.
Sometimes a little piece of leather, did it or not?
Well.
Not necessarily.
No. Fastened on, it was solid. Fastened on with screws for, it wouldn't have cut that like it did if it hadn't have been.
Yeah.
So I got my hand down in, I had my hand down in the water when I started to make the lick. Crank it. Lifted up on it and did crank it. But when the crank come out, I hit the license plate and just skinned that back, and it looked terrible. It wasn't. It's the bone. Didn't bleed.
Yeah.
It is into the leaders.
Yes.
And the bone.
Yes.
And it just looked so nasty that. I just keeled over on the fender, and my mother was in the back seat, and she got out and got to me to keep me from going in the water.
Yeah. And all that comes to your mind just from that one little thing there.
I hit that, and that there, I can rub there over that there, and it still tingles.
Yeah.
Numb down here, that right there, that's numb, yes. Oh, it was a bad bruise, and still it, and that's been years ago.
Yeah.
That was back in the 20s.
Well, yes.
So things can happen, you see.
Yes, and then also when you're out there now, them things come back to your mind.
Sure, yes. Yeah.
Think we better milk?
I expect, yes.
Okay.
She's out there, and Mama have stuff ready.
Yeah.
Now this is at the end of this marvelous Saturday afternoon. We got all the hay up and got it in the barn, and we baled it out there, and everybody's good human. The sun is almost, it's still about halfway up the mountain, I'm glad to say. It took it longer than I thought it would. And we've had the first installment now on this reporting on what's happened today. And the finest one, you see, is that meeting that boy and asking about the pigs and And one little thing after another comes out of it. That's marvelous. And this is up around 1500, somewhere along there, on channel 1, right, I guess it is, this Saturday, the 5th of October, 74.
You figure your trailer, now you figure a trailer will be about the most convenient thing over there? Where are you going?
Well, yeah, that is, not that I like it, but she thinks that's the best solution for to fit her needs.
Yeah.
They claim that a trailer, I've talked to a lot of people, now not women, but men, and they claim that they've lived in trailers, and they claim that a woman can get up in the morning and an hour's time they can clear things away in a trailer and have everything off of hand till they won't have anything else to do about the upkeep of the trailer through the day. That would just be the all they would have to do, if that's the case, the rest of the day would be to get the lunch and the evening meal. Mm-hmm. So that's what she needs, really, is something. She needs less work.
It would cut way down on the housekeeping, wouldn't it?
Well, that's what they tell me, people that's lived in. And that's what she needs now. She's not going to be able to do anything else. And we've got too much work to do here. In this eight-room house.
Yeah. She got something doing all day.
She finds something to do, yes,
finds
all
something
day.
To do. Yes. Yeah.
Now, through the winter, she won't sit around or won't lay down. If she can't find anything else to do, she'll gather up and fix a quilt and put a quilt in and quilt it.
Yeah.
She don't have any quilt that's ready to quilt, she fixes one.
Yeah. Leo said she was quilting last February when he was up here.
Yes. She's quite energetic about that quilting.
Yeah.
When she started the quilt, she didn't know who she was making it for.
Yeah.
And she don't know how come to make the decision. But the nearer done she got it, the harder she worked to get it done before Leo left.
Yes.
To give it to him.
Yes.
Pieced it out of woolen goods. Didn't quilt it, tacked it.
Yeah.
Used yarn and put the stitches about 3 inches apart, I expect. And then she'd clip that yarn, or maybe 2 inches, maybe pull up a little bow this way to have a little more room to tie.
Mm-hmm.
Then she'd clip between each stitch and tie 2 knots in.
Yeah.
Not in a quilt.
Not in a quilt.
Yeah.
That's new to me. Well, you know, I said this morning.
Most people, they used to call it tacking a quilt.
Oh.
Some people, I've heard them call it not in a quilt. But either way, it is.
You know, I said this morning, if she got any rest wherever she went, she'd better get a... Now, I was speaking of this from the experience over there, one of our neighbors. They had a big house, and as long as they had the big house, you see, their family just inevitably come and stayed with them and brought all the children, and she had to do the cooking. So what they did was sell the big house, and they had a little house down there on the corner. They just fitted them. They moved down there and there wasn't any room for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's what I said to you, but you said that wouldn't suit her.
No, no. No, it wouldn't. And that's not the case with our children.
Mm-hmm.
The children comes in, if it's the daughter-in-law's, they don't leave till the meal is over and the dishes cleaned up, kitchen cleaned up.
Oh, is that right?
That's right. And then the daughters don't leave unless something turns up that they have to, an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
Only way they go off and leave her. She tries to get them to go ahead, some that has right smart piece to go.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't do it. So that's... a fellow can't resent people like that are coming.
Well, now, they have to come so far over here.
That's right.
They can't hardly come over here between meals. They almost have to eat once over here.
That's right. That's right. And it wouldn't be a visit home if they didn't.
Yeah. But they help out.
Sure, yes. Yes. They, well... our children has helped us. We've been fortunate to have children that would the only thing we have to do, them that's able, is to let them know we need something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there might be at times that some of them wouldn't be in a position to do that, but that don't say they wouldn't be willing.
You know, that was right interesting this afternoon when we was out there. When you was out there raking the hay way up there in the far corner. What do you call that if up there?
Wheatfield Hollow.
Wheatfield Hollow?
Yes.
You had wheat up there?
No. No. It pertained to a crop of wheat, the how come the holler to get its name, I can't tell the story. I maybe have heard it, but I can't tell it as it was. But my understanding, something or another about this field right out here where old Imogene runs in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we went out there after her and hollered for her, coming and seen her coming out at the turn of the point. They had that field there in wheat, and wheat field, Holler got its name from that wheat field, I understood. There. But that was on my place here. So I can't tell the story. I can't tell what happened. But it was concerning a wheat crop. Yes, sir.
And that's where the little house was. And when you don't live in a little house, it goes down, don't it?
Yes, yes.
That's the trouble.
Yes. You take that. That would be one point in us leaving this house here. Some of them suggested putting a trailer on the little patch out there and trying it a year or two. We might not be satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just a year or two, maybe your house wouldn't be. Might cost $1,000 or $1,200 to get ready to move back to in a year. You see.
Oh yeah. Yes.
You don't know what'll happen.
You won't take a chance like that.
No, no.
Well, don't you know when we finished up there, you run up the end of the rows and picked up the hay that you'd missed with the baler, and you said that's what your brother called being stingy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Back when we was raising our family and we stacked the hay and we fed it out loose,
mm-hmm.
carried out a fork full of hay from the barn out to the field to feed a cow, if I lost a mouthful of it, I picked it up as it come back.
Yeah.
Brought it back to the barn or took it and give it to the cow.
Yes.
What hay you waste don't do a cow no good, nor a horse neither. The food that we waste don't do us no good.
But he called that being stingy.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Now how do you figure that? The time was worth more than the. No.
Well, a fellow's time. You can't count your time worth anything on a farm.
Yeah.
If you did, you couldn't make it. You know what I mean? It takes so much time to do a lot of things that if that's the reason young people nowadays won't farm. Their time's worth so much more out on the job.
Yeah.
That they can't afford to come back to the farm. They can't make progress enough to justify them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just to come down to the fact of it, they can't make the money on a farm that they can make on a job.
No.
If a person counted his time worth anything on a farm, and he had to. Had to have money coming in for every hour's work he done, he'd starve.
Yes.
On a farm.
Yes.
For it doesn't come that fast.
It doesn't come that way.
No, if you don't have management about you, better not bother farming.
Yeah. Well, now your brother farmed.
Yes. Some, but didn't make a success.
At farming?
No.
Yeah. And that was one difference, is he wouldn't pick up what hay he...
Well, this... maybe I shouldn't go into this, but it come to my mind... When he was on the farm down here and his work drilling was slack, he would put out some crop. And he cleared a field back on the mountain, and then I had a field cleared back here. Just a strip of woods between.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after we got the oats, or after we got the corn off in the ground so we could put it in the grass, why, he was sowing his field in oats out on the end of the point out there, Ridge. I was sowing mine in oats up here. Well, he had a man working one of his horses, and we was shovel plowing them in. Well, I had a pair of gray horses, the good horses I talked about the other day, and I had a man to help me plow mine in up here. Well, he got done sowing his field of oats. Well, here we heard the brush cracking and something coming, me and this man I had to help me. And here they, my brother and his hard hand, was coming with their horses to help finish up my oat field. Well, they come out. Well, you and Roy ain't doing anything. We're going to show you how to sow oats. And we're going to get these oats plowed in. Well, they went to work, and I called it cutting and covering. And he made the remark where I said, this dude said, you fellas, where you fellas plowing here, reason you ain't getting nothing done, you're making it look like a lettuce bed. Looks like it's been turned. Well, I said, if you're going to raise a crop, you've got to have a seed bed. Oh, I said, there's no use taking that much time. So him and his helper just went to cutting and covering, so I just got them stopped. I said, now look here. I want these oats plowed in. Don't want them, the ground cut and covered. You fellas can't plow like me and Roy's doing here. You can just take your horses and go right back out to the woods. Go on off. We'll finish it up. I want to raise some oats. As well as I remember, the yield on the two patches, I had about twice as many dozen of oats as they did. And I had to call a hand about cutting and covering. Why, they'd be places foot wide where there wouldn't be no dirt on. Well, oats won't take root and grow in solid dirt.
Yeah.
They've got to be covered.
Yeah.
So, he thought I was radical about that.
Mm-hmm.
But if he had went ahead of farming, why, the lesson now would have been worth something to him if he would have took, if he'd have took it, that it was worth anything.
But you think of that every now and then, whenever you start picking up some hay or something like that you spill. That you think about your brother.
Sure. Why, yes, a fella. If it's only a handful.
Yeah, that's nice.
And then another time, he thought I was radical all the time. I would work through the winter, and I usually had a good sled when we depended on farming for a living, which we did, yeah, most all of our lives. Yeah, we raised a family on the farm. You had to farm with horses. Well, you had to have tools to work them with. Now, like that hay there this evening, if the truck hadn't have been here or the tractor, I'd have had to have a sled and a pair of horses to pull that hay in.
Oh, you would have used a sled instead of a wagon.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, I would work through the winter. I had a blacksmith shop. Would work through the winter and fix my tools up till I could go ahead and work on the farm when the weather, when time comes.
Oh, you did.
And I had a one-horse sled and a good two-horse sled, and I kept them half-sold and ready to go. Well, I was putting up hay up in the
wheat field bottom?
Wheat field bottom, yes, up there. And he come up, he had a horse, an awful good horse that he sold a lot of, and he was a good horse. He brought him up, called him Tom. Brought old Tom up to go up and help me finish up my hay crop up there. Well, he hooked old Tom. I had my horses maybe in the hay rake or something or another. Well, he hooked old Tom by himself into the one-horse sled. And he went up through the bottom. He turned old Tom loose. Don't mind whether he was in front of me or behind. Well, they was up that where we picked up the 10 or 12 bale of hay and brought down this evening. Why, there was a lot of walnut trees, sugar trees there. That wasn't like I said about the bottoms. We didn't have that part cleaned up there.
Oh.
Timbers off of it. So there was just a road through, but old Tom got too close to a walnut tree, or maybe an apple tree, or some kind of a tree. He caught one run of my sled on this tree, and he was a horse that wouldn't let up. He was a good horse. Whenever anything got tight, he just threw his feet out that way and went on, tried to.
Yeah.
And he did with my sled and left one runner hanging against the tree. Well, that just tickled my brother to death, and he'd just tell that and laugh.
Oh, really?
About old Tom.
Yeah.
And talk about me having my tools all ready, and I kept them ready, you know. But it took old Tom to tie them up. But. So, now, this thing with that, It was fun for him.
Yeah.
But it wasn't for me. For I was serious.
Yeah.
And he wasn't. Anything like that was fun. He just laughed about it.
Yeah.
I've heard him tell it many a time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. About old Tom.
Walking off with a sled, yeah. Leaving the runner.
Yeah. Leaving one side of it. So now, there's a lot of things that behind, you see, like that.
Well, you put the loose hay on the sled.
Yes, and haul it to the stack, stack it, throw it up on the stack, and a man be on that tromping it, and if he knowed how to stack hay, he stayed around the pole.
Yeah.
That packed the hay around the pole,
yeah.
And left the outside loose, and the outside would tilt down, and that would let the water drain.
Yeah.
If you tromped around the outside, why, it was like a wash pan.
Oh, yeah.
And the water run in.
Oh, yeah. What did you do? Did you have little standards on your sled?
Yes, yeah.
Make a hole more.
Yes, sir. Oh, you couldn't haul very much hay on a sled if you didn't have standards.
Yeah.
Anyhow, two or 2.5, 3 foot high.
Yeah.
about 2 or 2.5 foot high, good strong standards. Then you could get your frame built out there, your hay packed, and let it stick out over the edges.
Yeah.
And you had a foundation to put your pretty good load on.
Yeah.
And the standards keep it from flipping off of your sled, you see.
Yeah. You know, that's one thing I learned to do was to put hay on a wagon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awful easy once you do it. You just build it on out.
Yeah.
And also that it will stay on the wagon and not fall off, but to put it way out over your frame.
Yeah. Yes, that there's, it's amazing how much hay you can put on a wagon or a sled that way.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is.
And it'll hold.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, that's nice. Your brother liked that. He must have been pretty agreeable fella to be around.
Well, in his way, yes.
Yeah.
He would help you any way he could.
He always see a little humor in the thing.
And he was lively and jovial.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you was now before you got all these roads in here, suppose you wanted, how would you get to your nearest store?
Well, back before the automobiles got plenty full, we rode horseback.
Yeah. Well, now how would you go?
Well, that bed, roadbed right over there.
Yeah.
Has been a roadbed since I was a boy.
Yeah. Well, you'd go up the right fork.
Go up this way, up the head of the creek here and out the ridge and down, and the store was up where I showed you the Ovepa post office was.
Yeah. Well, now, where would be the next one?
Well, Newton or Wallback or Forks of Laurel over on 36, or you could go over, over to, now there wasn't no hard road. Back when I first went to, back when we had to ride horseback, there wasn't no store over there. There was a little store just above the country store where we went this morning.
Yeah.
Up at the first, mouth of the first hollow. But it was just a little gentle inn building about like you mentioned about the house up here.
Yeah.
The cellar house out from the this white house up here.
Well, take the Forks of the Laurel. Now, leaving out your paved road now, how would you get over there?
Well,
on horseback.
Kindly of a shadow of a wagon road up across the points and down into the creek and up and but like I said, they was just a country road, wasn't no bridges, but it didn't, you know, I made mention going to the country store the other day about wagoning up the creek.
Yeah.
Well, back I've traveled the road over there when you just went up across around the hillside, and when you come to the creek, why you